Today we're going to look at the first of two parts of the story of Elijah. A very impacting story. Very interesting story, and we're going to check that out. And when we talk about Elijah, we're also going to talk about a continuation of discussing another king of Israel. The kings of Israel have ranged from a wonderful, God-fearing, God-loving men to those on the flip side of that. Pagan worshiping, evil people, possessed in some cases. And it's an interesting thing. I mean, these people are in charge, they rule. And some of them did a rather poor job of it. And the Lord knew that. And he took care of business. The time frame, as you see on the handout and up here on the screen, we'll go into that a little bit. After Solomon died, idolatry took hold and grew to terrible proportions. As we've discussed before, the kingdom of Israel became divided into two kingdoms. Judah and Benjamin in the south, they stayed faithful to the precepts of David, and they formed the southern kingdom with the capital in Jerusalem. The remaining 10 tribes formed the northern kingdom. The capital, as you see in 1 Kings 12:25, was Shechem. The capital changed over the years. Later, the capital became Tizra. That's also in 1 Kings, a little further down in chapter 14. And then ultimately Samaria in Kings 16. That occurred when King Ahab's father Omri was king. An evil man like his son, a very evil man, possibly even the most evil, worst, if you want to characterize as worst, kings of Israel. So the apple didn't fall terribly far from the tree when Ahab became king. His father was a horrific ruler. These two kingdoms were at odds with each other constantly. War between them was normal. In the northern kingdom, as we talked about this before, we noted that Jeroboam had returned from Egypt after an unsuccessful insurrection while Solomon was king. And when Rehoboam became king after Solomon died, Jeroboam came back and was actually successful in forming the northern tribes into a separate kingdom. So the split occurred after his return. But he was not a God-fearing, a God-loving man either, like some of the others. Not in the way he should have been. He made mistakes. One of his biggest mistakes was, instead of turning to the Levites, the priesthood, for the selection of priests, he went outside of the Levites and chose priests from elsewhere, which was against God's directive. Unlawful worship was rampant. And in the story we're going to talk about today, it reached, I won't say its peak, but one of its peaks under Ahab and his wife Jezebel after Ahab ascended to the throne on the death of his father Omri. Elijah lived during this period. Of course, and as it says on the screen, if I can get to the spot so you can actually see that. Ahab was the seventh king of Israel. We talked about the order of things last week, I believe. And you can see his reign was 874 to approximately 853 B.C., 21 years. His wife Jezebel, she was an instigator of the highest magnitude, and he followed her lead. She was the daughter of King Ethbaal of Sidon, and she was a devout worshiper of Baal. She worshipped the Phoenician idols. Phoenicia is modern-day Lebanon. So you can see, if you think about the proximity of Lebanon to Israel, you can see not too far away. Of course, on foot, by foot travel, horse travel, or otherwise, would take a while, but it's not terribly, terribly far. King Ethbaal maintained diplomatic relations with King Ahab. They were very close. Very close, because it made sense militarily for them to be allied. And secondly, they were of the same mind. They were both strong idol worshipers. Jezebel's influence was enormous on Ahab. Enormous. Let me bring this down a little bit more. Let me bring this, actually, give you a little bit more to look at. And as it says here, the citizenry was more than encouraged, directed to worship the idols of Baal instead of the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. I remember when I was going to Hebrew school and growing up in the synagogue, the constant mantra we always heard this was the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. The God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. We always heard that. It was just like almost like good morning, and then let's not forget Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. So if a Jewish kid in my era going to school as I did was listening a little bit, they at least knew that part of the lineage. They may not have known anything else, but they knew that it was Abraham, then it was Isaac, and then it was Jacob. They always knew that, okay? So I put that in there just, you know, kind of for two reasons. Number one, that is what should have been happening, and that is how I learned it, okay? As small little thing as it is. It's almost like ABC of the alphabet, okay? As you can imagine, and how did anything change over the centuries, but the Jew was persecuted severely in this environment, as the Jew has been persecuted. It continued. I've said this so many times. The distance to travel between a Jew and a Christian is a very, very short distance. And it is yet a gigantic gulf. Okay? It is so small. It's an acceptance of something that is, in my opinion, now very clear. And it's pitiful. And I don't mean that in a negative way. I mean that in a sympathetic way, that the Jew who dies without accepting Jesus as the Messiah, lost forever, sadly lost forever. So I repeat that because I really see that as being the case. Those Jews who respect and understand the Old Testament most don't, but they'll respect it at least, just need to go a little further, not a whole lot further, and to see the truth. And with that acceptance, eternity changes dramatically. Okay, so now to the ministry of Elijah. There he is. He appears on the scene as if dropped from heaven. There he is. He's on the earth. As it says in 1 Kings 17:1, here we go. And Elijah, the Tishbite, who was of the inhabitants of Gilead, said unto Ahab, as the Lord God of Israel liveth, the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, before whom I stand, there shall not be dew or rain these years, but according to my word. Well, no rain or dew for more than 3 years. Deuteronomy 11, you don't have to turn to it, verses 16 and 17, this is in line with that, those passages. And here's what it says in Deuteronomy 16 and 17. Take heed to yourselves that your heart not be deceived, and ye turn aside and serve other gods and worship them. And then the Lord's wrath be kindled against you, and he shut up the heaven, that there be no rain, and that the land yield not her fruit, unless ye perish quickly from off the good land which the Lord giveth you. Well, there you go. Elijah was just bringing to light for Ahab exactly what Deuteronomy said. If you don't worship the true God, be prepared, because this drought will occur. Okay? And that's what happened. Now, in the next section of 12, see, we had 1 Kings 12, 2 to 7. Next up will be Elijah being directed to go to Cherith for water and food. Now realize, if he stayed where he was, he would be in the same situation that other people would be in. Of course, the drought is now not killing off everything. So the Lord directs him to go here. And it says, And the word of the Lord came unto him, saying, get thee hence, and turn thee eastward, and hide thyself by the brook Cherith, that is before Jordan. Now, when I first read this, and I must say, it had been a while since I read this passage, honestly, I wondered, what did hide thyself mean? It's an interesting directive. What does it mean? Don't let anybody find you? Hide so that you won't be caught? Hide that you won't be found and killed after you give the news to Ahab? What does it really mean? And interestingly, it's really go find yourself, hide in a secret place. In other words, secrete yourself in a quiet place, a private place. And in Psalm, you won't have to go there, in Psalm 91:1, it says, if I can find it, hang on a second. I'm in the wrong Psalm. 91:1, it says, he that dwelleth in the secret place of the Most High shall abide under the shadow of the Almighty. So what a nice thing. What a comforting thing. In God's shadow. Isn't that nice? That's so nice. Especially as hot as it is these days, right? Shadows are good, right? Let's get into the shade. But the shade of the Lord is spectacular. So that's really what this is alluding to, a hiding place. Okay. Let's move on to, let's see where we are. All right. So this is near Jordan. And now we're going to go to page 2. Okay. Continuing with the directive to to Elijah. And it shall be that thou shalt drink of the brook, and I have commanded the ravens to feed thee there. So he went and did according unto the word of the Lord, for he went and dwelt by the brook Cherith, that is before Jordan, and the ravens brought him bread and flesh in the morning, and bread and flesh in the evening, and he drank of the brook. And it came to pass after a while that the brook dried up. Oops. Because there had been no rain in the land. Another interesting thing. Of course, if the Lord had wanted it to happen, the Lord would have allowed that brook to never dry. Everything else might have dried around it, but he could have continued, of course, to provide that to Elijah, but that wasn't the purpose. The purpose was that Elijah had to pick up and move again. Okay, all for a reason. None of what happens in this book is not for a good reason. Okay, there's nothing frivolous in the Bible. There's nothing, as we well know, contradictory in the Bible. Everything in here makes sense if you work at it sometimes to understand what that sense is. Okay, so this is an example of something the Lord could have done but chose not to for a reason. So let's see what happens. Elijah's moving on again. He probably didn't have a whole lot with him. Didn't have to call two men in a truck. You know, probably just a few things. I see him with a stick, almost like, you know, a hobo, you know, walking around. Not a whole lot. Didn't need much. And, of course, if he needed anything, the Lord would have provided, and he knew that. So what does it say? Now the Lord says, okay, get up and go to Zarephath, which he does. In 1 Kings 17:9, here's what it says. And the word of the Lord came unto him, saying, arise, get thee to Zarephath, which belongeth to Zidon, and dwell there. Behold, I have commanded a widow woman there to sustain thee. Isn't it interesting how many widow women, not just women, a lot of women, but there are widow women in the Bible. You know, right? We know stories of widow women. I like that. So he arose and went to Zarephath. And when he came to the gate of the city, behold, the widow woman was there gathering of sticks. And he called to her and said, fetch me, I pray thee, a little water in a vessel that I may drink. And as she was going to fetch, he called to her and said, oh, by the way, bring me, I pray thee, a morsel of bread in thine hand. And she said, as the Lord thy God liveth, I have not a cake, but an handful of meal in a barrel, and a little oil in a cruse. And behold, I am gathering two sticks, that I may go in and dress it for me and my son, that we may eat it and die. Things are awful everywhere. Example, this woman is prepared with her son to die. She has almost nothing to eat. How long? It's been a while. So Elijah's been sustained. He's healthy. And the world around him was dying. And Elijah said unto her, and this is so important, fear not, go and do as thou hast said, but make me thereof a little cake first, and bring it unto me, and after make for thee and for thy son. For thus saith the Lord God of Israel, the barrel of meal shall not waste, neither shall the cruse of oil fail until the day that the Lord sendeth rain upon the earth. That's great. She believed him, too. It was true. It reminds me of the oil in the story of Hanukkah. Okay? Only supposed to burn for a short time, burn for 8 days. Miracle of the lights, as we call it. It's festival of the lights, the miracle of the oil. Because the Lord said it would. And the Lord made it happen. I'm good. I don't have to ask any questions. I believe it. So does she. And she went and did according to the saying of Elijah, and she and he and her house did eat many days. Beautiful. And the barrel of meal wasted not, neither did the cruse of oil fail, according to the word of the Lord, which he spake by Elijah. Nice. I have got to catch up. See, I didn't put these on the screen. I apologize for not. I get so caught up in my notes, I don't look at the screen. That's why we have a screen, so that the people who are watching can actually see what I'm saying, because they don't have a handout, you know. So I need to wake up. Let's go back. Let's go down to where we are. Look at this. Look at this. All right. So we already discussed that. If you heard me, then it's good. So now what happens? What happens? Let's get down to a good spot here. Okay. From 1 Kings 17:17-24, it says, "And it came to pass after these things that the son of the woman, the mistress of the house, fell sick. And his sickness was so sore that there was no breath left in him." That means he died. "And she said unto Elijah, What have I to do with thee, O thou man of God? Art thou come unto me to call my sin to remembrance and to slay my son?" So here she is saying to him, knowing he's a man of God, "Am I the reason? Have you come to take my son's life because of my sin?" "And he said unto her, Give me thy son. And he took him out of her bosom and carried him up into a loft where he abode and laid him upon his own bed. And he cried unto the Lord and said, O Lord my God, hast thou also brought evil upon the widow with whom I sojourn by slaying her son? And he stretched himself upon the child three times and cried unto the Lord and said, O Lord my God, I pray thee, let this child's soul come into him again. And the Lord heard the voice of Elijah." Second. "And the soul of the child came into him again, and he revived." So another person brought back to life by God. "And Elijah took the child and brought him down out of the chamber into the house and delivered him unto his mother. And Elijah said, See, thy son liveth. And the woman said to Elijah, Now by this I know that thou art a man of God, and that the word of the Lord in thy mouth is truth." Now, she already called him a man of God, but if you wanted to cement the feeling, I don't think you could do any more, could you? I mean, is there anything more than bringing the dead back to life? I don't know, maybe bringing the thermometer below 90. No, this is, we know, this is the ultimate in what we see as a miracle. There can be nothing more than this. What else could there be? Resurrection. Okay. As a postscript, you'll see it says down here, let me bring it down on the screen so we, because people can see it. Okay. Here we have a reference. I put a reference into Luke 4, verses 25 and 26. I want to read this. This is very good. Jesus relates the story of Elijah, Elias, and the widow when he says in 24, "And he said, Verily I say unto you, no prophet is accepted in his own country." Boy, is that ever true. Is that ever true? My goodness. Oppressed, not believed, assaulted, killed, crucified. It's a tough life. When you bring the truth to people that don't want to hear it, you may suffer the consequences. but it is a consequence because you've done the right thing. And so Jesus said what he just said. And then he continued. But I tell you of a truth, many widows were in Israel in the days of Elias, when the heaven was shut up 3 years and 6 months. I find that interesting. They always call it 3 years, and Jesus goes, well, to be precise, it was 3 years and 6 months, okay? Not just 3 years, okay? So, you know what? It's 3 years and 6 months. When great famine was throughout all the land, but unto none of them was Elias sent, save unto Sarepta, which is the same as Zarephath, a city of Sidon, unto a woman that was a widow. And of course, just as a small comment, kind of what we just talked about, the people who don't believe in Jesus as the Messiah. And I mentioned the Jews earlier, they don't. Forever lost. And kind of like those people who were never healed. Okay, widows who suffered with the loss of their husbands and had to make do with very little or almost nothing. And then lepers in those days who were not healed. What a difficult life. We don't suffer, most of us, no, I shouldn't say we, many people do, but we don't suffer quite the same way anymore, and that's a blessing. Okay, so now Elijah is going to meet with Ahab, and it says here in 1 Kings 18:1, and it came to pass after many days, that the word of the Lord came to Elijah in the third year, saying, guess what? Pick yourself up again. Okay? Maybe this time you got some more stuff, you might have to call the moving truck. And go. Go, show thyself unto Ahab, and I will send rain upon the earth. Finally, after 3 years and 6 months. In 1 Kings 18:3-4, it says, and Ahab called Obadiah, which was the governor of his house. A governor of his house is like his chief of staff. Okay. Now, Obadiah feared the Lord greatly. Now, there lies the difference. Ahab, the king, an idol worshiper, a paganist. But yet Obadiah, his number one guy, is a believer in the Lord. Very cool. Let's keep going. Go to page 4. Okay. Obadiah takes a great risk. I mean, think of it. He is living in the midst of Ahab and Jezebel. He is in their house. He believes in the Lord. He's a God-fearing man. And as it says here, for it was so when Jezebel cut off the prophets of the Lord that Obadiah took 100 prophets and hid them by 50 in a cave and fed them with bread and water. This was a brave and wonderful man who, in the midst of the possibilities, likely... I don't know what the relationship was between him and Ahab or Jezebel directly, but you can almost assume that if he had been found out, that his life would have been likely forfeited. What else would they have done? They wouldn't have said, don't do that. Naughty, naughty. Okay? Not likely. Would have been severe. But he did it. He did it. Then it continues, on his way to the king's palace, Elijah and Obadiah, and Elijah said to him, go tell thy Lord, behold, Elijah is here. That's in 1 Kings 18:18. And then in 1 Kings 18:16, it says, so Obadiah went to meet Ahab and told him, And Ahab went to meet Elijah. So there is Obadiah, the true servant of the Lord. The name Obadiah appears a number of times in the Bible, and including the book of Obadiah. So you might wonder, because this is a God-fearing man, is this the Obadiah who wrote the book of Obadiah? But no, it's not. No, it's not. Time frame doesn't work at all. There are, as I said, many people. I think the number is 12 or 13 people in the Bible named Obadiah. In 1 Chronicles 3, one of David's descendants is named Obadiah. There's another one mentioned in also in 1 Chronicles in 7 and in 1 Chronicles 27, different people. So no, it's not the same. Speaking of the same name, the very first time, I'm going to say it probably was about the first time. It's a guess. I was young and I heard King Ahab, the name, for the first time. Who knows how many years ago that was, but it's more than last week. Okay. And as a kid, I wondered, you know, I hadn't heard, the only time I'd ever heard the name Ahab as a kid was in the story of Moby Dick by Herman Melville. And I said, well, is this the same guy? Yeah. And I went, well, no, it can't be the same guy, because he's a sea captain chasing a whale. And this is the king of Israel way before that. But again, it was the only time I'd heard the name. But the truth is that in Herman Melville was a marvelous writer. I like Herman Melville very much. His selection of names is interesting. But the one we're focusing on right now is Captain Ahab. And in fact, Melville did choose Ahab, because he very well knew the story of King Ahab. And he infused in the personality of Captain Ahab several of the things that infused a King Ahab. Okay? Not exactly the same, of course. There's a lot of license taken with characters. But that is where Melville did get the name. He did. Melville's writings include other biblical names, like Ishmael is also in Moby Dick, and there are others. Not Moby Dick. He didn't name Moby Dick after a biblical character, okay? But Moby Dick, the whale in the story, is actually named after a true whale that did terrorize, I believe it was the coast of New England, prior to the writing of the story. And I believe they called, not without joking, mocha, like the color or the drink or the flavor, Mocha Dick. And he just adjusted accordingly. But so Ahab found his way into fiction as well. A driven man, not an altogether pleasant guy, okay? Possessed of a lot of evil, very angry, very vengeful, of course, considering what happened to him. This becomes not a story of wailing. Moby Dick, it becomes a story of revenge. Ahab seeking revenge against the whale. Only to be, I'm not going to be giving anything away, okay? This is not a spoiler alert, okay? It's not a spoiler alert. Ahab does die. If you've seen the movie, the first one, with Gregory Peck as Ahab. Gregory Peck was a great actor. I like Gregory Peck very much. He got criticized for this role. Frankly, I don't know why, because I think he did a really good job. But in the end of the film, unfortunately for him, they harpoon the whale, and the line that's attached to the harpoon gets tangled and pins Captain Ahab against the body of Moby Dick. Strapped around. Very awful See, very well done in the film. And Moby Dick takes him for a submerged ride, wherein Ahab dies. So I give you that little piece of information. I recommend the film. I don't write critiques for movies, but it's a well done film, and I think it does a decent job in regard to the book. But characters are good. The acting is very, very good. Some of the best actors of the day are in that film. So recommended. And always keep Ahab's name, biblically in your head while you're watching the movie. Okay, we are done a little early today. We're going to finish up next week, and we're going to see the very graphic and faithful confrontation between Elijah, and I'll say Ahab, but it really is Elijah, and the false prophets, the pagan-worshipping men, which is really a confrontation between the true God and the false God and idol worshippers. So that's it for today.